Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast from a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How you doing, Adam?
I had one of those great walks that I was promised when I moved to L.A.
Where Oh, yeah. Where Everybody loves walking in L.A.
The air was
It's the walking city.
75 degrees and sunny.
Yeah.
Felt really good. I feel as good as I've felt in a long time getting one of those in.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, it's a cliche at this point to talk about it, but the air being as clean as like the Sierras in L.A. is a really special once-in-a-lifetime feeling experience.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this being that way all the time. Clean as a whistle is this air.
I say let's never go back.
Yeah.
I just took a walk of my own, Adam, over to the post office where we keep our post box.
A vital resource to everyone.
Yeah, a resource that I hope the clowns in Washington are persuaded to preserve and expand, even.
I bought some very fun stamps this week, thinking that that might help, thinking that my small purchase will keep them afloat.
That's good. You know, I had not been in a long time because I'm trying to limit the number of trips to places I am taking. Walking around the neighborhood, I'm doing plenty, but yeah, I've got quite a haul of mail from the Uxbridge Shimoda P.O. box. Do you want to do a little mail call?
I do.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
And this one's going to be more visual than it usually is, because we're both looking at each other on FaceTime.
That's true. First thing is from A. Bowser. I think I know who that is.
Oh, yeah.
Next FunCon frequenter, A. Bowser. And it's a... Oh, this looks like it's a Valentine card.
Aww.
And it says, life is like a box of tribbles, and I'm glad I got you.
Oh, that's great.
And it says this. Dear Ben and Adam, happy... I'm going to add... belated Valentine's Day. I'm a little bit embarrassed to be sending a Valentine to my favorite podcasters instead of a boyfriend or Imzadi or whatever, but your podcasts are a big part of my week. Thank you. Congrats on 4 years of The Greatest Generation. Please keep making it forever. Live long and prosper. Alexandra Bowser. Wow.
She's one of the best.
That's awesome. Thank you, Alexandra.
She's a frequent friend at Max FunCon. It, made me think about what might happen to that great event this year.
Yeah, who knows at this point. Everything's up in the air. Okay, this next one is from B. Tilly of Zanesville, Ohio.
Oh, I think I know who that is.
Yeah, that sounds mighty familiar to me. Always carefully packed. When B. Tilly sends something to us.
That guy does it right.
No half measures on the packing.
What I like about opening a Bill Tilly package is that I also get to read a Zanesville, Ohio newspaper.
Oh, boy. Okay, so here's the letter. Hey, guys, here are the two missing issues and the TOS annual that is tied into the last annual from the Trexmas TNG comic drop. Consider this package the ... and now the conclusion to that one. Looking forward to downing some hoofs with you and screaming to the heavens because a Vegas is coming!
All my hopes, Bill Tilly.
He signed it Card Daddy. That's great.
That is
so
great.
He sent us some bagged and boarded comic books. We've got Star Trek TNG Convergence, Star Trek Convergence, and the Star Trek The Next Generation annual. This looks like it is set in Geordi as Dr. Watson type of environment.
There's an expression that Bill Shatner has sometimes that is on that TOS version of the comic that is very much a do I smell a fart expression.
That's great.
Thanks, Bill.
Okay, the next one we have here is a small packet or petite paquet. This looks like it maybe came in from Canada, from Jay Zarnett in Waterloo, Ontario. So let me get into this. Okay, there's a letter. Dear Ben and Adam, I'm prepping to move sometime soon, and I came across these 30th anniversary cards, and I thought you might like them. Maybe they can even be useful in a game segment of the pod. This is the second of three card sets, and I unfortunately do not have the others, but perhaps other friends of DeSoto do. All the best. Thanks for the many great hours of quality pod. I don't know if we've seen this particular type of trading card before. These are like a different breed. A lot of foil in play.
And it looks like some holograms too, right?
Yeah, some holograms.
Higher quality cards than the stuck together cards we have grown used to.
The cummy DS9 cards. There's a Nexus Ribbon card.
How about that? Do you get a piece of the Nexus Ribbon in that card?
Yeah, it's stapled to the back.
Uh-huh.
Here's one of Morn.
Oh, that's great.
So these seem to span quite a large era, and I guess these are Phase 2 cards, focusing on the inhabitants of this Star Trek universe.
Wow, that is a pretty wide net for a series of cards. It's great.
Thank you so much for sending these, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
Okay, couple more packages. Here's one from Matt B. of Bridgeport, West Virginia. Matt B. has definitely sent us some stuff in the past. I think he is a officer in the ATF, if memory serves.
Whoa.
All right, here we go. Hey guys, it is your friendly federal friend of DeSoto, Matt. Your podcasts keep me company on long drives through rural territory, and the FOD community helps me feel a little less isolated while working an area very far away from my hometown of Boston. I'm sending a collection of ATF patches and coins. They include our Hurricane Relief Mission patches from 2017 and 2018, my West Virginia field office, a local drug task force where I work, ATF Super Troopers, aka Vermont, and two special operations patches that I can tell you about over a beer sometime. I guess they're secretive special operations. The coins include the Irish Emerald Society, Up the Long Ladder Society, and our arson/explosives response team. Thank you for making great pod and great parasocial relationships. And Adam, when I saw O'Brien try to solo clear that long hallway with his weapon light blazing, I shouted, "No, you're gonna get killed!" at the TV. Your tactical instincts were right on. Hope you guys make it to Pittsburgh again soon. Matt. P.S. The guy behind the weird DC live show P1, with all the references to SF-86s and EQIP, that was me making 2%er jokes for the other government dorks in the audience.
That joke really killed.
Yeah, that's like that's a very powerful memory, because we were reading that P1 not understanding any of it, and it was destroying the audience.
It's like a person who brings a date to one of our shows. That's the exact same effect. They're hearing something being said they don't understand, and it's killing.
Why are people laughing at this? So he sent us like all of these Velcro-backed shoulder patches and stuff. There are probably over a dozen of these in here.
That's great. And I just finished the construction of the new studio in the new place, and half of the wall behind my computer is all felt, so I feel like I could use the Velcro side to those patches and put them right on there.
You're going to have some cool stuff on there.
Very cool.
And then some really cool challenge coins.
Whoa, that challenge coin is thick.
Yeah, these are excellent quality. I mean, similar quality to the ones we do, I would say. But
wow,
you know,
we've got a real growing collection of those. That's always really cool.
Yeah, thank you so much, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Really neat stuff. Okay, Adam, I think this is the last of the packages that I brought home with me.
All right.
It is also from Bill T. of Sangerville, Ohio.
Bill! We do not deserve him.
This is a big one. This is like the the Priority Mail larger size standard rate shipping box.
Yeah, which means he spent like $1,000 to send it.
Yeah, indeed. All right. He's got a piece of college-ruled loose-leaf paper here for his letter. Hey, fellas, hope all continues to be well and safe for you in these crazy times. Now seemed like the perfect time for a fun mail call, so here is the latest additions to the Greatest Gen trading card series and the first sets for Greatest Discovery. Wow!
Awesome.
I couldn't figure out how to make hoof-shaped bubble gum for them. Maybe next time. Have fun finding storage space for another one of the ridiculously large boxes I send. Thanks from me and all the FODs for everything you do. Hopefully we'll get back one or two or ten together soon. As always, I ride for Greatest Gen. Be safe, your card daddy, Bill.
Bill Tilly. So, best in the
this
business.
This is, I'll hold this up to the camera. A huge cache of cards.
Wow.
And,
His work on the Star Trek Discovery series has been really great to relive. You can see all of his work on Twitter at BillTilly1973. Wow, those are really great.
Yeah. At some point, he figured out how to make these in a quality that is better than the companies like Skybox
right.
and Rittenhouse that produce actual licensed Star Trek cards.
Those guys need to put Bill on the payroll.
Really, they really do.
We should put Bill on the payroll, too.
It's true. This is amazing, Bill. Thank you so much. There's boxes and boxes of cards in here, and I can't wait to lie on the carpet in the rumpus room and just look at them for hours and hours.
Thanks a ton, Bill, for all you do. The hoofs are on us when we see you next.
Indeed. Adam, I'm going to pause the pod for a second and run and wash my hands, and then we can come back for our discussion of Season 6, Episode 11, Waltz.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No. Of course you don't.
Ben, we open on the backside of a Del Sol class starship, and I gotta ask you, did you check out that ass on the Honshu?
The Honshu's butt is very, it's like the most Star Warsy part of a Federation ship I feel like I've ever seen.
We've talked a lot about how much we like the Del Sol class, and yet I think it's got the best ass in Starfleet. I didn't know that until this episode.
You think it's the best booty?
Yeah, really do.
You very rarely get a nice, long, luxuriant look at the booty of a Del Sol like this.
I know. I feel like you've seen the backside of most other classes of ships. I feel like if you're a leg man, most Starfleet ships will do it for you.
Yeah.
But if you're an ass man, the Honshu is for you.
If you want a ship with a donkey booty, you're going to have to look no further than the Honshu. Yeah, this is a prisoner transport mission that the Honshu is on. And Sisko is along for the ride. And he's kind of captain's logging about this in a way that is a little bit circumspect about who and what he is talking about. So that the maximum impact can be had when he walks through the hallway and comes around the corner and it is revealed that the crazy broken man that he's referring to is none other than Gul Dukat.
I heard you were aboard.
I really like this log out of Ben Sisko because he admits some things about himself that he's uncomfortable with. He kind of admonishes his thoughts about, you know, we really shouldn't care if this guy lives or dies. Or this guy's the worst of the worst. Why? What are we even trucking him around for? Like, pretty
dark you don't
stuff.
Really hear like that kind of thing come into a rant like this. Like, you never hear like, perhaps we should treat our prisoners with dignity and respect, even though Gul Dukat is a war criminal.
Yeah, I mean, and if he's that twisted up about it, why go on the mission? Ben Sisko.
I'm trying to be fair.
Yeah. There's a lot of humanity in the way Sisko is treating Gul Dukat in this open, even. Like, thinking about what Gul Dukat has been through from his, you know, putting himself in Gul Dukat's shoes and thinking about losing your daughter, losing your big chair at the apex of your empire. Like, that's devastating. No wonder he lost his mind.
Was it just me, or does Dukat just look different in this episode?
I didn't pick up on that.
I wonder if it's lighting or angle or maybe even the prosthetic, but something about him looked different than he's ever looked before. And I think in saying that, I think that's concurrent with how different he is as a character. I think whether or not that's true, I think it's effective in showing us that he's a changed person.
The lighting in this episode seemed darker and moodier than, you know, it's a moodier, darker show than TNG ever was, but this lighting seemed darker and moodier than your average Deep Space Nine episode.
A couple of things we learn about this scene between Sisko and Dukat and the brig is that Dukat isn't going to be going to trial until the war is over, but there is going to be some pre-trial working happening here. There's going to be some testifying. Sisko's going to be one of the testifiers, but he's not going to tell Dukat any more than that. Dukat's kind of grilling him about what he's going to say, and Sisko says he's just going to tell the truth, and that is extremely unsatisfying to a person for whom your testimony is going to determine the course of their life.
Right. The leverage here is really unfair, and it's very unusual for Dukat to have no leverage in a scene.
Yeah.
And like, Dukat's also the kind of guy that would never trust what somebody is saying if they're being nice to him.
Yeah. Dukat's a real Adam Pranica in that way, right?
Yeah, that's exactly where I was kind of trying to take that.
One of the many qualities that me and Gul Dukat share.
Maybe that's what you're picking up on, is that he's making a lot of Adam face in this episode.
Yeah.
So they're kind of having this conversation, but they are headed to Starbase 6, blah, 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 and they sustain some bangers when Sisko tries to walk out of the room.
Yeah, we get bangers to theme.
Battle stations, damage control teams, report to level 5J.
One of our favorite transitions to theme song.
I love banging right into that theme.
We cut directly to DS9 and Ops after the theme, and it's Kira telling Odo, Dax, Bashir, and Worf that the Honshu has been destroyed by Cardassians.
A wing of Cardassian attack ships took this thing out.
Those Cardassian torpedoes went so deep it put the Honshu's ass to sleep.
I mean, I thought a lot about this, right? Because the Del Sol class starship with the big weapons platform up over the saucer is like the kind of ship that Captain Maddox had, right?
Yeah.
Like they're basically purpose built for killing Cardies.
Yeah. The Honshu is not one you want to fuck with.
But they got taken out. There's some evidence that there were some escape pods and shuttles that made it out of there. So they're going to be survivors, but they have no idea whether or not Commander Sisko is going to be among them.
That's the whole reason that there's not sobbing at Ops, is that there's the hope of these escape pods.
There's a sliver of hope, but as with many stories like this, Starfleet magically has almost no ships, so there are only going to be two ships on the search party detail.
Right.
And I guess they have like a fairly large amount of space to search, right?
Yeah.
Like they're saying like this isn't enough ships to search the amount of space that we have to...
There's some schedule pressure happening here with Worf's assignment of the Little D. Like the Little D needs to go out to convoy duty. And it's going to be able to conduct the search after its 12-hour transit to get out to the search area. So it's got 12 hours to get out there and then 12 hours to get to the Badlands. And they only have 52 hours total in order to get the Little D to the convoy protection mission. So very little time, and Worf is not pleased.
And the orders still stand.
It's a very specific like number of hours that I kind of thought that they were going to do something with.
Yeah, in a we know Sisko and Dukat are going to run out of air in a certain amount of hours kind of thing. There is no timeline on the other side of this.
I feel like that could have been a way to take this story, right? Like they're in a shuttle that got disabled and it's like just tumbling inert in space, and there's like it's getting cold or something like that. Right. I don't know. What they went with
but
was...
But instead it's like administrative stress, right? Worf is the employee that was given more job than he has hours in the day.
Yeah, yeah. And what they went with was camping in the Star Trek caves. And Sisko wakes up not knowing where he is or what's going on. And they kind of talk through what happened.
We were attacked by a wing of Cardassian ships, ironically.
Takat's like, your breath fucking stinks. You've been puking all night, bud.
Oh, man. Poor guy.
Sisko's got morning breath and puke breath.
That's bad.
A real morning in college situation for Captain Sisko.
Yeah, yeah. I had the other day, I've been sleeping with a mouth guard last couple of weeks for reasons.
Oh, this is a new technology for you.
It's not. I've had this mouth guard for a while, but I'm not always as stressed out as I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost never do this, but I forgot to brush my teeth before going to bed one night and did the mouth guard. And when I took it out, it like released like a scent cloud that was like one of the worst things I've ever experienced that early in the morning.
Yeah, dude. That is bad news. I'm pretty fastidious with that thing. I'm on my second mouth guard because, of course, I broke the first one in the night.
You chewed through the first one?
Yeah. That's.
Did you get one made professionally, or did you just get the one at the drugstore?
No, I got a pro model like made at the dentist, and it's a very traumatic experience if you've ever gotten one done that way.
No, I think I need to, because the one I got at the drugstore that I did myself is not well aligned, so my jaw is a little bit wonky when I wake up.
Yeah,
which I can't imagine is a good thing.
That's gonna give you headaches. You don't want.
Is it gonna take like 10 months to get an appointment in a dentist's office when this thing is over?
That's a good question. I haven't tried.
There's gonna be a lot of pent up demand.
Yeah, there's gonna be a lot of teeth scraping and hair cutting at the end of this. Imagine the dumpsters full of cut hair in 6 months, just overflowing. It's going to be awful.
Dukat was able to save Sisko, but not Lieutenant McConnell, who was the other Starfleet that was helping him carry Sisko to the shuttle.
Right.
So they have a distress beacon going, and Dukat made the magnanimous choice to program this to a neutral distress signal. It's not a Cardassian. It's not a Federation coding. It's just a neutral coding. So whoever shows up first can have both of them. One of them will be a POW, and the other will be back to his old tricks.
You love games of chance.
Yeah, this is my favorite. I love betting with my entire future.
Yeah.
So, you know, this, I think we've seen this type of device before, right?
The rug doctor transmitter that they have.
I was going to say the kegerator.
Yeah.
Transmitter.
It really has a specific shape.
Yeah. I think rug doctor is in fact more apt. It looks like it's there to steam clean the Star Trek cave.
Right, right.
It's just a box with a bunch of lights on it. Sisko's fucked up. He's kind of stuck on the yoga mat that Dukat put down for him. His arm is broken. It's in a space cast. There's very limited resources on this planet. Dukat refers to the surface as being incredibly harsh and inhospitable. But hopefully they can find something to eat out there because he found firewood.
This is the scene where we get an introduction to just how mentally fragile Gul Dukat is. Hard to know whether this was going on while he was in the brig or not, but at least in the Star Trek caves, we start to see the 6 degrees of Gul Dukat's inner life.
Yeah.
As played by the characters in his life. And the first person that we see as Dukat goes away to forage is Weyoun. And Weyoun is especially cruel describing Dukat's time in the hospitals. And in saying that, I'm wondering if maybe none of these hallucinations accompanied him there, because they seem to be talking about that in a past tense kind of way.
Well, yeah, and I don't think it's obvious that these are hallucinations right off the bat, because we've known the Dominion to have secret Manchurian candidate projects going on in Star Trek caves before.
That's fair.
So, like, the first time I saw Weyoun, I was like, oh, has Dukat, like, gotten back to the Dominion with Sisko and is, like, fucking with him somehow? He's like...
We see this kind of TNG episode all the time. This was, like, Future Imperfect. your suspicion here, right?
Right.
No way.
But then Dukat flips out and tries to shoot Weyoun, and Weyoun vanishes. So I like it. I like that Gul Dukat is kind of aware that he's nuts.
Yeah.
Like, as the episode progresses, like, he's aware that these characters are not, like, real enough for other people to be... Like, they're very real to him in the sense that he, like, argues with them and tries to kill them and shit. But, like, when he's around Sisko and one or two of his fantasy people are there also...
I don't need your fantasy women.
He's pretty good at staying chill for the early part of the episode and not revealing to Sisko that he's, like, hearing voices.
Yeah, there's a togetherness about Dukat's specific insanity that is useful for the purposes of the storytelling of this episode, right? Like,
yeah.
He can keep it bottled up for the most part from Captain Sisko until toward the end.
He's kind of Sarah Connoring, like, yeah. That the doctors believed him when he said, I'm feeling much better, doctor. You know,
yeah.
He's, I guess, a better actor than Sarah Connor because he's actually, like, persuaded them that he's, like, sane enough to stand trial,
right.
I guess.
Captain Sisko, like, one of the most respected characters in all of Star Trek, really loses a lot of stock for me here because, you know, Gul Dukat goes through the effort of foraging and making a meal for him, and all he's doing is complaining about it.
How is it? Needs salt.
I do like that at least Sisko tastes his food before seasoning it. That's a thing that a lot of impolite dinner guests do, is they'll just salt and season their food before even trying it first.
That's very rude. When you have a dinner party at your house, are you watching to make sure people don't season their food first?
I'll say I'm not watching, but I've noticed.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Do you have a reputation for undersalting your food?
That is a great question. I think I've gotten better and better over the years about that. I think the one time you do that mistake of salting and then reducing a thing,
yeah,
and making a meal that's super salty, it makes you a little salt shy,
right?
For a while after that, and I think that might have been my experience until I brought it back to equilibrium. I think I'm pretty good with the seasoning of my food over the last few years.
I also think, like, all of the, like, food messaging we got all through the 80s and 90s,
yep,
made us very scared of salt in a way,
yeah,
that,
which,
like...
Yeah, which is stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, now I'm hitting basically every plate of food with mild and salt before eating it, like, as it should be.
Wow. La-dee-da. That's where your Max Fund donation dollars are going, folks. Buying Adam fancy, fancy mild and salt.
You know what? You hate. I'm going to get you some for your birthday, Ben.
I have too much right now, actually. So,
Dukat asks about Odo and Kira and Quark in a how are my buds doing kind of way. Like,
yeah,
totally missing the mark on what their relationship could be. There's a assumed familiarity between Dukat and Sisko that Sisko doesn't rush to discourage. He's sort of playing the part of a good listener throughout this scene and throughout this episode, and sort of lets Dukat spool himself out in front of him.
Is that game? Is that Sisko doing the math on, like, I'm very badly physically incapacitated right now and I need to keep Dukat on my side?
That's how I saw it. It's very much a James Caan in Misery situation.
Yeah. Because, like, it takes a while for Sisko to figure out that Dukat,
yeah,
is hearing voices. Like, even that interaction is kind of an indication that Dukat doesn't really have a great grasp on reality, right?
Right, because it's extremely common sense to figure that Odo and Kira and Quark fucking hate him and always will.
Right.
But Dukat's theory presupposes that maybe he was just undermined and actually genuinely cared about everyone on the,
yeah,
station the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Dukat victim complex shit,
yeah,
is super strong.
Like, I really like this episode, not to skip to the end, but the thing about two powerful leaders coming together, even though Dukat is insane and foolish about what his reputation might have been, I feel like it's that sort of quality that we like about some podcasts, like two people really good at a thing talking about their experience doing that thing, feels like it's an undercurrent in this episode. Like, Dukat is very wrong, but it's also two titans of their people coming together to compare notes about a circumstance.
Yeah, like talking shop at a very high level.
Right. He's having a like a familiar conspiratorial conversation with Sisko in this way.
Yeah, it's the Jackie and Laurie show of Star Trek conversations.
There's a limit, though, because Sisko, towards the end of this scene, like, disabuses him of the idea that they're friendly enough to have a friendly conversation about work.
Yeah.
They're not friends and are not going to be. They're just in a situation that stuck them together.
And also, like, Sisko doesn't even believe that Dukat gives a shit about what he thinks.
Yeah.
Like, he basically drops the poker face at the end of this scene.
Yeah. Dukat keeps seeing imaginary people. These scenes with Dukat and Sisko are very long. They constitute maybe 90% of the episode. We're cutting back to DS9 and the rescue mission so little. There's probably 5 minutes of that in this whole episode.
This is a René Auberjonois directed episode, and I feel like it's a Star Trek tradition at this point to give the very actorly episodes to one of the cast members to direct, and this is no exception.
Really agree. Dukat's experience talking to imaginary Damar gives us the goal of the entire thing. Damar wants Dukat to kill him, but Dukat wants to hear Sisko say he respects him first. That's going to be his goal.
Oh yeah, Damar wants Dukat to kill Sisko.
Yeah,
Damar isn't like Alien 4, like kill me.
Damar wants Dukat to kill Sisko, but before Dukat is willing to do that, he wants to hear Sisko say he respects him first.
Yeah, this is like cross-cut with the reveal that the system that is theoretically transmitting the rescue beacon is actually offline.
Yeah, it's a real leaky rug doctor situation here. Sisko barely touches it and the panels are coming off.
Yeah, he's got to try and fix it, and surreptitiously, because the front of it says system online. It's the back that says offline.
Ben, if you're consuming syrup in a way that you don't want other people to know about it, is that surreptitious?
I've actually kind of stopped consuming syrup, and I'm all sauce of squill now.
Why is there an interior and exterior display to this thing?
It seems like the exterior system online should not be working if the back one that's under the panel says offline.
Yeah.
This is a catastrophic engineering failure on the Federation's part that would be possible.
What if we made a life-saving piece of equipment and we put them on all of these escape pods, but we made the redundancy capable of lying?
This is like my recent airplane emergency where I had the oxygen mask put on me and the bag inflated. Like, I'm never going to trust the oxygen mask ever again if the bag doesn't inflate, you know? I need visual confirmation that oxygen is flowing to the mask.
You want whoopee cushion size inflation on that oxygen mask.
Right, and I want the system online panel to be 1,000,000,000% trustworthy.
There are a couple of scenes where Sisko sort of covers up that he knows the secret of the rug doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And those are pretty satisfying. We cut back to the Little D, and Worf's log says that they've picked up some survivors, but none of those survivors are Captain Sisko. Can you imagine being rescued and then
being
seeing
on board and everybody looks disappointed when you materialize on the pad?
I just know how that would go for me. Like, yeah, go ahead and find your quarters or whatever.
Yeah, there's probably something available on deck 6. Fuck.
Here's a towel.
I am not totally confident that that's been laundered, so you might want to wash it first.
Alma Ring, come to Ford. Alma Ring, come to Ford.
What are you doing? Come on, what are you doing now?
Sisko has taken it upon himself to create some life-saving inventions made of household materials because he's ripped a tine off of a fork and he's like working the inside of the rug doctor, trying to get this transmitter working properly, and so he reboots the box.
Yeah, and like we immediately cut to the bridge of the Little D, where O'Brien like catches something booping on his panel.
Commander, I'm picking up a distress signal.
And they're like, okay, another distress signal, leading us to believe that the rug doctor has been repaired. And then immediately back to the Star Trek cave, where Sisko hears Gul Dukat coming and has to like put everything back in place and turn the rug doctor back around and get back down on his yoga mat like nothing was going on.
This was really elegantly done, this bit of cross-cutting for the next several minutes. Like,
yeah,
building up our hope and then dashing it. It was just expertly done, to the extent that I almost felt like it was cheating. Like, I almost got mad at the episode for it.
I was wondering, like, I was like, wow, like, the rescue is coming much earlier in the episode than I expected, and I wonder what they're going to do with the rest of the time, because this seems like the, like, it seems like the arc is prematurely coming to a close.
Yeah.
So, like, now Sisko's a little smug, right? Like, he's feeling really good that he knows something that Dukat doesn't. He has leverage for the first time since that first scene. And he starts to kind of blow sunshine up Dukat's ass, which is, I love that Dukat is like so thirsty for respect and approval from Sisko, but also like can't see when he's being told what he wants to hear, you know? When Sisko's shining him on, he's like, great, this is working. I'm finally getting somewhere.
Yeah, you can see him change. This is a really fun part of the episode because it gives us Major Kira as the hallucination.
Yeah.
And when she goes 11 out of 10 laughing, it's like she provides her own light source for the Star Trek cave.
Yeah. It's the brightest part of this very darkly lit episode.
Yeah. And, you know, the counterpoint to that is that she is absolutely vicious when she tears into Dukat in these scenes too. Like, it is definitely Kira laughing at and not with him.
Yeah. And it's very fun to see her get the apex status in an interaction with him.
Yeah.
Because usually he has something to threaten her with or some power over her. Or just the rules of propriety forbid her from telling him actually what the way she feels. And in this scene, she can like really fucking rip into him.
Sisko at this point really sees the outbursts for what they are. And he finally, like, as far as he's willing to go with Dukat is like, look,
I've judged you unfairly, but I think you probably had good reasons for everything you did on Bajor.
But he does it in that tone that is like overly patronizing, that even like it's unsubtle in its tone. But Dukat doesn't take it as patronizing. He's willing to buy what he's selling, and this just makes Hallucination Kira like piss her pants laughing.
Yeah, it's fucking great.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what Dukat wants is essentially for Judge Sisko to deem the way Dukat behaved during the occupation to have been fair and, in fact, better for the Bajorans than what would have been otherwise. He wants to feel like he has a clean record when it comes to his military occupation of Bajor. And he actually has some evidence to cite, like that like the death rate went down, and like he was making changes to a system that he inherited that was much more brutal than it needed to be.
Right, like people expected deaths at a certain extremely high level, and then when for some reason they were less than that, he saw that as a great victory, even though many, many, many people died under his watch.
Right.
This just totally unravels Dukat's mind, and he just starts shooting. But we've cut back and forth during the last few minutes because we go little D surface, and on the little D, they found the signals of two people, and then they beam up those people, and it's Adam and Ben.
Yeah, and everybody is crestfallen. Like, we didn't even bring Ensign Hospitality.
It's meta disappointment because we get the disappointment of Adam and Ben on the transporter pad, and then when we're back in the Star Trek cave, Dukat has shot the transmitter.
Yeah, because he found the Tyne, right?
Yeah.
He found that that Sisko had broken a Tyne off of a fork, and he's like, what could you have been doing with this? Trying to reset an electronics device? putting it in that little reset hole.
Yeah. You never have a ballpoint pen when you need one. But Dax had a pickup of the signal just a second before it went away. And so for the viewer, there's a little bit of hope here.
Yeah.
That hope seems to be dwindling for Ben Sisko because Dukat has set down the phaser and in a very Goodwill Hunting kind of way has chosen the wrench.
Just fuck him. That's why.
And starts going to work on Ben Sisko.
Well, Sisko's going to learn pretty quickly that if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, I think that this is a great twist in the storytelling because it, like, we had this sense of safety when we thought the little D was heading there, like straight here, and now it's gone, and we have no idea whether or not the rescue can happen in the remaining amount of time. And and it feels very scary for Sisko at this point. Like, how scared do you have to be to hold your cast up to protect yourself from a guy that's wailing on you?
Great sound design for this scene, too, because you hear that wrench hit the cast, and it just makes you wince to hear it.
Yeah.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
You hear, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
Back on the little D, they are getting the bad news FaceTime from Major Kira, who needs to probably reset her Wi-Fi router because the signal is not coming through super strong. You know, she's like basically saying, like, you got to call the search off. This is it. You got to go rendezvous with the wagon train that you're supposed to be running security for.
There's a really interesting conflict on the bridge here because Bashir and O'Brien feign that they couldn't tell what Kira was saying, and Dax and Worf aren't even trying to hear that.
Well, it doesn't really matter what we think. Commander Worf is captain here.
They're going to follow the orders that they know to be true, and even though Bashir and O'Brien think and say almost exactly the same thing, Bashir is excused from the bridge. Yeah. It's such a classic junior high school, like, two students punching each other, and then, like, only the one that the teacher sees gets kicked out.
Yeah. The one that gets caught with the note.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of read into this that it was like a, Dr. Bashir, you have a giant brain, a genetically engineered brain. You should know better.
I read it like, what is Bashir doing on the bridge?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't need to be there.
There are all these people that have been rescued from an attack on their starship that are probably bleeding out in Six Bay. Why don't you go down there?
A bunch of the people we've rescued are feeling pretty bad about themselves right now and their relative value compared to Captain Sisko. Maybe you could go counsel them.
Yeah. Use your planet-sized mind to help them feel better about the fact that we're all obviously disappointed that they're the ones we rescued.
When we cut back to the Star Trek caves, Sisko is not dead, but he is bleeding, and he's defiant. He's like the little D.
Yeah.
He will never give Dukat the absolution he's after, and instead proposes a game of true or false. And they conversationally play this game having to do with the responsibility of command.
Yeah, Sisko wants the evidence for what Dukat is claiming, the evidence that he was actually a good leader of the Cardassian occupation.
Tell me I've led a good life.
What?
Tell me I'm a good man.
Sisko needs evidence like I need raw materials.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting to hear the perspective of Gul Dukat here because his argument is all proportional, right? Like he started out at this level, and I'm putting a hand in front of my face to show you.
This is the problem with the looking at each other during podcast.
But the resistance always met him on the same level, and so his punishment was levied, the resistance attacks became more frequent,
right,
and over and over and over. And so he blames the Bajorans for their reaction to his policy.
That the resistance was reacting to the previous policies and weren't dealing in good faith with the reforms he was trying to make. Right. But he also slips into the, like, we were the superior race. Like, part of their complaint with us was that they were ashamed that we had better technology than them. And that's an ugly look.
It is, but that's what I wanted to hear. Like, I want to hear that kind of ugliness from him as a reason for all of the cruelty that he brought down on the Bajorans. Like, I think it's very easy to forget just how in the past Bajor is, how agrarian they are.
Yeah.
And how overmatched they were during the occupation. And he really lays it out there as like they were a century behind us, like they should have worshipped us as gods.
Right. This conversation, like the cast of characters gets bigger and bigger because Damar and Wayun and Kira are adding their two cents, and at a certain point Dukat can't really keep up the pretense that he's just having a conversation with Sisko anymore.
There are some great camera tricks in the scene too, Ben. A lot of like long sequences where you're panning with Dukat walking over to Sisko, and yeah, when you go back to two, like the first hallucination has been replaced with a different one.
Right.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, really good. And it plays with your sense of like the camera is giving you Dukat's perspective when you see one of his hallucinations, but then when you don't, you're getting more Sisko's perspective. And it's right, very like adroitly designed how we cut between those two perspectives.
Dr. Sisko, unlicensed therapist, finally draws him out. Like the yeah, the crescendo to the whole thing comes to a point with Dukat saying, I should have killed them all.
Killed them all, of course.
Yeah, it's the witness booth confession that
totally
you want to extract right before baseball batting the witness.
Yeah. Yeah, which is what Sisko finally does. He lays the pipe on Dukat and then makes for the entrance of the cave, and the storm out there looks pretty rough. It looks like they got a case of Ferengi lightning out there.
One thing Dukat did not lie about was that the surface is in fact very inhospitable.
Yeah, there's that moment where Sisko like drops the pipe and he's like, God, you know, Dukat was right about one thing. It's not great out here.
Respect to him on that subject, yeah. Anyways.
So he finds the shuttle, and as he closes the door to it behind him, Dukat hits the mini trampoline and makes it inside.
Yeah, that was
like so great.
My favorite moment in the episode, Dukat flying through the door and like clotheslining Sisko.
And then they get down to like a They Live style brawl outside this thing.
Dukat is trying to put sunglasses on Sisko. Sisko refuses. It's kind of a miracle that Sisko is able to hold his own at all in this fight, given how fucked up he is.
Yeah, arm in a sling Sisko. Very formidable.
Yeah, and like samurai hair Dukat, who's fully flying around in this scene.
You think Sisko has him beat when Sisko kicks Dukat in the knee genitals? But then Dukat makes it back to the shuttle and closes the door, like with him and his hallucinations inside.
Yeah, he gets away. Bad guy Dukat is back on the menu, boys.
If this were a show made 10 years later, you know Dukat would have like taken the shuttle up into the air, circled around, and then looked down like out of the window, like a bad guy in a helicopter.
Yeah, with the chorus of hallucinations behind him.
Yeah, yeah,
that would have been cool.
This is the low point of the episode. You think it's over for him, so we get back to the little
episode that Sisko dies in.
Yeah. Yeah, time has run out on the little D, too. Worf has to take the ship to the rendezvous. And then, just in the nick of time, O'Brien. We're so glad O'Brien's on the bridge, right? What if they kicked him out?
Oh, boy.
It's O'Brien's station that gets the signal from Gul Dukat.
And we get Worf eyes, and then it's post-pickup, right?
Yeah.
They
cut the pickup out of it completely. You don't get to compare a triumphant transporter room moment of getting him back.
Yeah,
which
they
is
just
nice.
bring all the other people that got rescued down to the transporter room to show them what they were really going for.
Wait, there were party poppers, and there were no mixed drinks when I was beamed up.
Yeah, nobody put a lei around my neck and gave me a kiss on the cheek. What gives?
So we understand that they got Sisko, but not Dukat.
Yeah. We get Sisko in six bay with computer chips adhesive to his head. And he just kind of like downloads about what he just experienced with Dax. And the thing that really hit me was, like, you go through life thinking that there are, like, good and bad actions, but everything is a shade of gray. And you meet somebody like Ducat, and you realize that there's true evil in the world. Ducat's a bad dude.
I mean, this could have meant nothing before this episode. You really need the episode to make that statement true, I think. Because it's just conjecture about him. We saw him do bad things.
Yeah.
But until we hear Ducat describe himself and his feelings the way he does this episode, like, I'm not sure if I would have believed what Sisko was saying.
Well, and crucially, like, Ducat is nuts in this episode, but in a way that's irredeemable. Like,
yeah.
His core beliefs are not the thing about him that is off balance.
You wouldn't even forgive him.
No.
That's how far gone he is.
Yeah. My liberal guilt has limits.
Wow. Did you like the episode, Ben?
You really want to do this? Here. Now. Okay. Let's do it.
I really liked the episode. Yeah, I thought it was a really tense episode. And, like, you know, on paper, the episode where Gul Dukat and Sisko are stuck in a cave yelling at each other for 40 minutes, like, I don't necessarily buy that in the room.
Mm-hmm.
But based on script and performance and direction, I think it is an excellent episode.
Yeah, I think so too. Really solid. I mean, it feels like theater to me.
Due to
its number of setups, it's just a great episode. Look, I mean, we alluded to it earlier, but I think it merits a specific comment. Mark Alamo's work in this episode is maybe the best it's ever been. He is really great this episode, really scary, really unhinged, really chewing the scenery. I really loved his work.
True that.
And we've said it a lot, it's not easy to carry the weight of a scene with Avery Brooks.
Yeah.
The guy's the master, so I think a surprising amount of game recognizing game in this ep.
Yeah, like, the sparring partner you want is somebody that's, like, roughly in your weight class. And I don't think it's an insult to Mark Alamo to say that, like, Avery Brooks is, like, a giant when it comes to being a scene partner.
Yeah.
But also, like, that's the thing everyone says about Avery Brooks is that he's, like, a really giving actor. He's there to make you look good as well.
He's going to make sure you get off first.
You know how I like to get off, Adam, is by reading our Priority One messages. Do you want to see if we have any in the inbox?
That is a very strange kink, but I'm not going to judge you for it.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from David, and it is to Maureen and Robert. Message goes like this. Hi, Maureen. Sorry I spent $100 on this. I love you. Hi, Robert. That is all.
Ooh, boy.
What I'm seeing here is that David stole $100 from Robert.
Right.
And he's apologizing to Maureen for some reason.
Right. Maureen was counting on that stolen money to, she was going to buy some hot merchandise. It's just a whole crime syndicate over there, I think.
That is all, isn't it, David?
Yeah.
I don't think so, actually. I think there's a lot more to this story.
Yeah. Some very suspicious stuff going on over here.
Look, while we both appreciate the support that a Priority One provides us,
of course,
I'm not suggesting that people steal money from their friends, especially, in order to buy one.
Yeah, steal it from somebody you don't know that well.
You know what, though? On the other hand, what do I care where the money comes from?
Yeah,
I'll take your dirty money.
This is a great way to launder $100. we have another Priority One message here, and it's with love from Carrie, probably in the living room, and it is to Tim Langan in Somerville, Massachusetts. It goes like this. Tim, I love you so much, and with all of my heart, you big, big nerd. There's no one in the world I would rather shelter in place with. Happy anniversary, honey. Love you forever. Dang!
That's pretty sweet. That's a secret message coming from the other room. That's Carrie.
That's ultra sweet. We missed their anniversary, it looks like, by 21 days.
It's hard to keep secrets from someone that you're sheltering in place with.
Yeah, I mean, I think buying a P1 is probably one of the few things that you could keep a secret, right? Because you could just, like, you know, sneak off and do it on your phone.
You just sneak off and open up the other person's wallet or purse.
You're like,
take out $100.
They're like, hey, why is your browser in privacy mode? I definitely didn't buy a P1 on MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
I swear I was watching porn.
Where it's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. That wasn't me. That's not what I would do. I would never do something like that.
But if that is you and that is what you did, we appreciate the support. Thanks.
We sure do.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I'm going to give it to Bashir for being the guy that gets in trouble for and kicked off the bridge. I don't know if we've ever seen Worf pull rank on Bashir like this before, but I thought it was a very funny dynamic that they had. And I really liked seeing Worf shame Bashir in this moment.
Yeah, I think the thing that makes Bashir my Shimoda also is that he doesn't fight it at all.
Yeah.
And it's weird that Worf chooses an enlisted man to stay over the doctor, but I also know, like, O'Brien's more useful on the bridge than Bashir will ever be. So, like, it makes perfect sense why Bashir has to go of the two of them.
Yeah, Worf really needs to just break up that dynamic. Like, them separated is as good as them both gone, I think.
Boy, that's a thing you saw all the time in junior high, too. You got to split up the best friends.
Yeah.
They're just going to ruin the class.
Gotta get that gold press latinum. Get that
gold press latinum.
Am I right? Am I right? Gotta get that gold press latinum. Get that
gold press latinum.
Latinum.
Gold press latinum.
That's a lot of yamak songs.
Well, we need to figure out what episode we're watching next, and to do that, we go to gach.biz/game and consult the Game of Buttholes Will of the Prophets.
We sure do, Adam. The next episode is Season 6, Episode 12, Who Mourns for Morn? And the description is as follows. Quark inherits a fortune, and a group of thieves lay claim to the estate.
All right. One of the rare Morn-centric episodes.
Yeah.
Can't remember getting one of these.
Yeah, indeed.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Where are we at in the Game of Buttholes?
Looks like we are currently on square 47. Just two squares ahead is a space butthole. And then seven squares beyond where we are is a quarks bar. So that one's not in range. Only the space butthole is.
Okay. You want to roll that sucker?
What do you think I rolled, Ben?
I'm guessing a 1 based on the question.
Shula! Did I win?
Hardly.
That is exactly what I rolled. We are inching along currently on square 48 and a regular old episode.
Okay, looking forward to a regular old episode next week on The Greatest Generation.
A regular great episode.
Yeah.
Is what they are, right?
Indeed, indeed.
Each one greater than the one that comes next.
Yeah. I mean, compared to like season 1, episode 1 of TNG, this is incredibly great.
We've got the greatest viewers in the business. Many of them support the show in their own special way, don't they?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways you can do that. You can recommend the show to a friend, colleague, or loved one.
You have all the time in the world for that, right?
Yeah.
Like, nothing but time. You're having awkward FaceTimes with family members.
Yeah.
And you're asking what they've been up to that last week. It's nothing new. Nothing new is happening.
Nothing new.
But here's something you can tell them.
Yeah. You could also use your free time to write us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. 5-star reviews really help us rise in the ranks over there and get the show in front of other potential new listeners. And growing the show would be great for us.
Really would. You might be surprised to know, Ben, that I recently talked to Adam Ragusa.
No kidding.
Adam Ragusea of the famous YouTube cooking channel. He is a big, big star and is very, very busy.
Too big to take our calls, apparently.
He wanted us to know that he is definitely not upset with us in any way.
Yay!
He just has a phone that he shares with his children, and most of the messages that get sent there are deleted or fucked with somehow. So, hi to everyone from the great Adam Ragusea. He, of course, is the one who made our great interstitial music for this show based on the inspiration of Dark Materia, who created the OG theme music for The Greatest Generation.
We also got to thank our buddy Bill Tilly, who makes digital trading cards of every episode of this show and of Greatest Discovery now as well. He posts those on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen, and he's at BillTilly1973. We also get physical versions of those trading cards sent to us because we are the host of the podcast, and we are very lucky boys. Very lucky to have our card daddy.
It's true. You may consider yourself lucky if you make an online friend out of the many online communities that have formed up around this show.
Indeed.
If you're on Facebook or Twitter, be sure to seek those out. And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which is sure to be the longest episode ever. Longest and girthiest.
Yeah. And steeliest.
And most ribbed.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.